All right, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. Gabe, Giannis, and I, we are on the mic for a weekly episode. Gabe is laughing right now because if you're watching us on video, I have a Spirit of the Games award, a sledgehammer across my shoulders because my attention was lacking, and so I wanted to grab a little fidget thing. But we appreciate you guys checking out these podcasts. Today's going to be an incredible episode. Fired up to talk to Gabe about all things family, fitness, maybe even a little bit of business. But good morning, Gabe.
Good morning, man. I thought you were up to something like specific because you went, you grabbed the sledgehammer, you had the biggest smirk on your face, and then you hit record. But no, apparently it was just a little a little fidget toy.
Dude, I took this back from the gym and I brought it to my home office. And it's just been sitting there in the corner. I haven't given it the attention it deserves. So this sledgehammer, it's funny if people are like CrossFit Games. I used this term last time, and I don't know how many CrossFit Games historians there are that listen to this podcast. But one year at the CrossFit Games, there was an event to use a sledgehammer and drive a metal metal rod into the ground, and it was rowing sledgehammer. And that year, if you won the Spirit of the Games, you got one of the sledgehammers. So that's what I got in my shoulder right now.
That's a cool story, man. You've told it a couple of times, but it's cool. And it's funny because it's literally just a sledgehammer. Like, you can go get that thing at Home Depot.
Dude, you get this thing at Home Depot. And then they just put the graphic on it and then it's all good to go. But hey, I wanted to talk about, so yesterday it was early in the morning, I had a couple of guys come over to the garage and, brings up this, we had a Matt Chan on the show and he was talking about, you don't have to get up early, blah, blah. But yesterday I got after it early and we did this workout and it was a gut check workout. And, it was 100 cal row, 80, 60, 40, but in between you did 25 hand release pushups and back squats, and the back squats increased. And you finish with 10 back squats at 225. So I hit that yesterday. I'm feeling fired up this morning, man, and ready to talk about a bunch of stuff that's on our mind.
So in defense of Matt Chan did not say you did not have to wake up early. What Matt Chan was talking about was the fact that a lot of people should and definitely prioritize sleep over this whole like early morning grind it out every single day. And yeah. Dude, I resonate with that, dude. Like, there was a long time where it was like, how much can I get done, period? And I think that having the know-how of, hey, Shay didn't get a good night's sleep, I didn't get a good night's sleep, like, what am I better off doing? Waking up at the time I planned to wake up and go for a workout, go for a run, or getting an extra hour and a half of sleep? I think that, especially for a lot of people like you and me that like genuinely, like fitness is like something that's like, it's an itch that we need to scratch every now and then. Like, I think that having the discipline to recognize when, you know, your body needs a little rest and recovery is important. I do think that most people just need a little bit more of like, get the shit done kind of mentality. But at the same time, I do know that, you know, there's probably a lot of people listening that can resonate with, dude, I just need to get after it. And I need to get after it all the time. And I think that, you know, you can speak to this too. There are some times where you burn the candle on both ends, man. And that's not good for anyone. That's not good for your fitness. It's not good for your health. It's not good for how you show up as a husband, as a father. And I think being able to recognize when you're straddling that line a little bit and staying on the right side of the line is something that we've talked about this a bunch, comes with age and kind of maturity. But once you kind of figure that out, I think you can only get better because you're recovering better, because you're really good about like, oh, today's a push it day. Like, got good sleep, I feel good. Like, I'm going to get big bang for my buck with my training and my workout, versus other days where it's like, hey man, I'm going to go in, hop on the erg and like, you know, go for 30 minutes and I'm still going to sweat, but it's not a day where I'm going to push it. I'm going to feel so much better afterwards for doing that.
Yeah. I thought, dude, by the way, I am a huge Matt Chan fan. He is the only guest so far that's doubled up aside from, you know, I mean, basically you and I are on the, you know, on the Jason Kleeb podcast. He's the first double guest because of how much I love Matt Chan. Him talking about peptides, dude, and him talking about his stack and like, dude, now between him and JP, I feel like I'm delinquent. I feel like I need like, cause I just take the Jocko Fuel Time War. That's really all I take. And it's like a packet of like multivitamin. But these guys, dude, they had a list like I don't know, man. I was pretty impressed by both. I mean, and we just had those guests on the show, and it just got me thinking, like, man, what am I missing out on right now?
There's so much stuff out there. And I think it's a little overwhelming because, you know, you might listen to that and then you look at someone like both of them, honestly, like how old is JP?
You know, I should know that, but I know he's in his late 40s.
Dude, he's in his late 40s, right? Like you look at JP and Matt Chan, two guests that we just had on the podcast. And dude, I'm sitting here like, if I look that like that at like in my late 40s, dude, sign me up right now, this second. Like those guys look great and they're clearly doing something right. But I think that the slippery slope there is, you know, people listen on the podcast or, you know, I think that they're very honest about the fact that the supplements play like a secondary role, especially like Matt talks about like the exercise, the health. But I do think that, you know, sometimes you see people on Instagram, much like shorter videos, clips that make it seem like it's just that one, you know, supplement or just that one peptide that's the reason they look as good as they do at a certain age. And it becomes overwhelming because people think that these are shortcuts to get there, and they completely miss the fact that these guys are prioritizing their sleep, prioritizing their relationships, being really good with their nutrition, getting exercise. They've been training for years. Like Matt has been just athletic and an athlete for years. Like you don't look like that because you started taking a supplement you heard on Huberman for 2 months. Like you look like that because you've dedicated your life to being a healthy, capable human being. So I think that that's like the slippery slope of hearing some of that stuff.
Yeah, it's like the seasoning, dude. This is like the little pepper they're putting on top. Like it's such a little, remember that guy?
It's Salt Bay.
Dude, whatever happened to that guy? We were in Miami one time. We wanted to go to his shop or whatever. And then I realized like basically the only way that he comes out with like his little salt fingers was if you order one of his like premier steaks and they were like, I don't know, $400. Like, I don't need to go get that guy to go do that. But do you remember that guy? The Salt Bay fire was too much in that Texas. We're back. That Texas Wi-Fi, dude. When are you getting that laser cable?
So just yesterday they came and because they had to trim back a tree for where they're going to run the wire through. So hopefully next week we'll be on fiber optic. Dude, honestly, I can't complain. I've been on like outback farmland, like, you know where I live. I mean, we don't have a lot of things going on out here and the internet's been like pretty fire until recently. Been getting a little choppy, but we're gonna get into modern times with fiber optic internet here. Hopefully,
it is interesting. I mean, I'm not gonna be a conspiracy theorist, but I'm gonna say this: it is interesting that your internet was like pretty good for years, and then these fiber optic guys come into town, and all of a sudden it goes to shit.
And all of a sudden, like they make your internet terrible. They're like, "You want to switch? I think you want to switch."
And dude, they're planting the seed right now. So like, here I'll give you an example. Couple weeks ago, gets a little shaky, couple more, you know, and then every time you're getting a little bit more pissed off. It's like us here in California where, or anywhere where, your power outages and, you know, it happens once you're like, sucks. Happens again. You're like, ah, then it happens again. You're like, I'm getting a generator. And it just, I don't know. Anyways, it's just one of those things that Kim compounds. I wanted to tell you about
But to finish the thought though, the supplements or the seasoning.
Oh, that's
the important thing is everything else. I think that was a thought. But I actually have a funny story coming off of that Matt Chan episode, unless you had something.
No. Go ahead, because then I want to talk about Carl Kringle.
Okay. So we got off the Matt Chan episode and I was talking on group text with a bunch of my buddies from back in New York. And I was asking them, I was like, you know, any of you guys like mess around with peptides or have you taken it? And I was curious. And none of them do. But anyway, we got into talking about TRT. And so I had the question for you. Would you ever like consider, have you ever like, because I know you've done your blood work and stuff. Would you ever do, testosterone replacement therapy? Have you thought about it?
No. My TRT, and I actually could pull it up. I could find it. I did my blood work through Merrick Health. Like maybe I used to do it more often. Now I need to hit those guys up and get it done again. I actually connected Matt Chan after we were done. My testosterone is not super high. My testosterone, if I'm not mistaken, I could pull it up here in a second, was like in the 600s. It wasn't super high. I would not be interested in TRT because I don't blame people who do. I just feel pretty good. Like I have a lot of energy. I feel good. I feel like I recover well. And what I'm worried about with the TRT stuff is like, dude, I don't want to start something that I can't like, I just really don't want to like shoot myself in the ass with a needle and then have to be like dedicated to that. It's like, I don't know. It's one of the reasons why we don't have a dog. It's like, I want to be able to just like pick up and go travel and not have these other obligations. I don't want to have this obligation to stick myself the needle twice a week, three times a week. And then if I'm traveling, take them with me. It just doesn't sound appealing to me enough to make the sacrifices for what I would be getting out of it.
Got it. That was a ridiculous analogy, by the way. I guess the question is more like, because I think that what there is, and I think this has definitely changed, is like a little bit of a stigma of, you know, taking exogenous hormones for any reason. But I guess the question isn't like, you know, hey, you feel good, would you do this anyway? It would be more of like, if you didn't feel good because right. your testosterone was low, like, would you be open? Like, is there anything ethically or like stigma wise that you would have against using exogenous hormones to literally just feel better? Cause I think that's the argument for, right? Like the argument for doing this stuff. I'm not saying, hey, you're like 25 years old and you want to get super jacks. You're just going to pump yourself full of, you know, synthetic testosterone. I'm saying like, you know, you're in your 40s, your 50s, you've kind of, you know, what we were saying before, burned the candle on both ends for like two decades. You're doing all the right things now. You're doing sleep, you're doing nutrition, you're doing exercise, but you've kind of dug yourself into such a deep hole that like, you just don't feel great. And it's literally because your testosterone is so low. And there is this solution to where, you know, yes, it's going to be something you're probably going to have to do for the rest of your life, but you can replace that hormone and just feel better. Is there any reason that you wouldn't do that?
No. I mean, so I just right. emailed, I just sent my blood work to Liz. If she wants to pull it up and go down to testosterone, I don't know exactly.
Is like, this a full blown HIPAA violation here if we just post this on the screen or no? Because oh, you
there might be some HIPAA violation. Maybe we shouldn't be pulling this up. But I'm looking at this testosterone, free testosterone. Oh, so yeah, my testosterone, total testosterone, 479. Ooh, reference interval was 264 to 916. So like, I mean, she could just pull that up and where that's at. We don't need to show like my, you know.
So based on that, it's what, like normal, but like low end of normal is kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, and so when I talked to the doctor about that, and there's other factors, obviously, and this was blood work from like a year ago. So I got to go in. I'm delinquent on getting it done again. Or maybe I had it done by another company. I would say that if I wasn't feeling good, and I looked at my blood work and my doctor, a doctor who is forward thinking about human optimization, told me that it would definitely make me feel better. Maybe my sex drive was low. Maybe name the thing. Dude, of course I would do it. No question. Like if it would make me feel great. But the thing is like I feel good now. So that sacrifice or that commitment isn't worth it to me, is I guess the point I was trying to make.
Yeah, that's a valid point. But I just thought it was interesting because my friends that I was talking to were very much like, no, I would never do that. And I kind of fall in the same camp of like, dude, I feel great and I'm, you know, feel like I'm super young. And if anything, I keep feeling better with the things that I'm doing. But based on what I've heard, like I would be super open to continuing to optimize if I could. And for me, like a big thing is like, at least from what I've heard, and I recently heard this on an Atiya episode, like this stuff makes zero sense if you're still trying to have kids, because the big impact that it might have is on fertility. If you like get on it and then your body stops being able to produce that stuff on its own. So that's why it's like, obviously a no-brainer not to do it for me yet, but I don't see why I wouldn't if I ever got to the point where like it could just make me feel better, I guess.
For sure. I don't judge anybody for that. And Chan actually brought up like herbal-based testosterone boosters. So now I'm super interested. I'm going to reach out to Merrick Health. I'm going to get my blood work done again because I'm looking at this and this is like a year ago and I feel like I could optimize there. So you got to find the right doctors. You got to find the right people to work with. But I want to also check into those like herbal supplements. But I think the long and short of it is like, dude, if you're doing everything else right, if you're sleeping, if you're hydrating, if you're training hard, if you're doing all those things and there's still a way to like maybe feel better, I mean, shit, man, I think you got to do it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree, man. But it's super interesting. There's just so much stuff out there. I recognize some of the names he was rattling off, Tongat Ali and Ashwagandha is something that I've been taking, but that tends to just be, it's supposed to be really good for your sleep. And that's like pretty, at least now, like readily recognized.
Yeah, he brought up like melatonin. So a lot of something like for your skin too, like that helps him not get burned.
Oh,
or something
yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
With melatonin, darker.
It wasn't melatonin. It was melanin something. It was like a peptide.
Melanoma. It was like.
No, it wasn't melanoma. It definitely wasn't melanoma.
But we need Chan on again to go over. You know, we need to find another MD to come on and talk about that kind of stuff. But I did want to switch gears a little bit to a really cool conversation I had yesterday, actually.
Yeah, let's do it with our good friend Carl.
Dude, so Carl Kringle, former Navy SEAL. Let's read his bio. Commander Carl Kringle is a 20-year Navy veteran. He deployed in support of Operation Iraqi Freedom. He was training and aiding in Afghan Special Forces. Dude, he conducted sensitive missions with the government and DOD agencies. He was part of the top units. He was part of a development group, so dev group. He was part of SEAL Team 6. And prior to that, he was a nuclear engineer? I think it was the way he started. Dude, his background was just gnarly. Like we were talking about it yesterday on this webinar for Customs and Border Protection. So every month or two, we do webinars with different subject material experts as a part of our agreement with Customs and Border Protection, their SRT unit. We support them. And he comes on, he starts talking, and we're asking a bunch of questions. And one of the things that he brought up, and I love this, I have to share it, is the idea of high stress versus trauma and running through movies. And let me explain what that means. So he's saying that gross motor control is improved because you already watched the movie ahead of time. And so before he would go in and, you know, break down doors and be on operations, he was differentiating between trauma and a stressful situation. And the way that he compartmentalized those two things was watching the movie ahead of time and seeing himself be successful in that movie changed it from a traumatic experience to a stressful experience. So, you know, I imagine what he meant was, you know, you're knocking down a door, you're clearing a house. If you visualize yourself over and over again, clearing this house, seeing someone, you know, addressing the target, moving on to the next one, that changed it because you already saw it in your mind from that to like, oh shit, there's someone there, traumatic to stressful. And the analogy he used, which I thought was pretty interesting, was imagine if you're on a roller coaster. And so I kidnap you, Gabe, and I put you on a roller coaster and I cover your head with a black bag and I put you on a roller coaster and you're like, what the fuck, right? You're going all over the place. Like you would be freaking out. You would probably never get on a roller coaster again. Ever. Like you would probably never get on a roller coaster again. Imagine if you just like took you from your house right now, put you on a roller coaster, black bag, and you just went for it. But if I took you and said, hey, I'm going to cover your head. We're going to be on a roller coaster. You're going to have this turn, this turn, this turn, this turn. You would be more prepared. It would still be a stressful situation, but it wouldn't be traumatic because you had visualized that movie in your head before it occurred. And, that was some of the stuff that he was talking about preparing for difficult situations by watching the movie ahead of time and running through what that would look like. And those milliseconds, in his opinion, obviously made a huge difference. He brought up a story told in particular about that, where when you're approaching a stressful situation, let's just say it's, I don't know, the birth of your child or the CrossFit Games, or in his case, an operation. Running through those movies keeps you in tune. When you then get out of those movies, right, and you allow yourself to decompress and downregulate, you're not as sharp. And he brought up an example where he was like at a military base and you know, like in the wire, like he was in an area where he should have been calm, and he was wearing just board shorts and he was going to go take a shower, just chilling, like he was mentally and physically not in that movie anymore. He was downregulated, and all of a sudden mortars started coming over the wire, like over into their base. And he had to like run for the shower, the porta potty area, to like get cover. But they had codes on them, And because he was like downregulated, not in that movie scene, not in that like prepared situation, it took him extra long to figure out the code because he wasn't in that same mindset. So that was an example he gave of like, in stressful situations, run it through, see yourself be successful and execute. And I thought I took a lot away from it. I probably just butchered that story, but dude, it was a really great webinar for the guys at CBP.
Right. Cause he was doing that for Customs and Border Protection that we work with to kind of give them some tools. That's cool, man. It's cool to hear it from guys too, that like, you know, this isn't just like a concept for them that they're like, that they came up in a vacuum and that they theoretically think will be helpful. Like this guy has used what he's talking about in like some really, really high stakes situations, which makes it real, right? Like this stuff, clearly there's something behind it because it's helped him do some things that, you know, me and you could probably only imagine doing. So I think that that's what makes it like instantly, it gives it some validity for me. And it makes total sense, man. Like visualization is a big part of performance in sports. I mean, I was never, you know, a high tier athlete, but even in, you know, college swimming, our coach used to have us like visualize our race, like visualize like how many strokes is it going to take you to get to the wall? What's the turn going to look like? How many kicks are you doing underwater? And we used to do this stuff. And it's funny because at the time, you know, being a 20-year-old know-it-all, like you're like, this is so stupid. You know, like how does this translate to, you know, my race? Like I should be in the weight room or actually swimming or doing sprints. But now thinking back on it, it's one of those many things that like I regret having not taken more seriously, because the validity of that stuff is completely true, right? Like visualizing the perfect race, the perfect hit the wall turn, the perfect amount of kicks, the perfect like first breath definitely helps you actually execute on that when it's the actual race and it's high stakes and whatever. And again, I'm talking about like college D3 swimming. I can only imagine the high stakes of like, you know, you're kicking a door down with some guys on the other side that are, you know, not trying to do anything nice to you.
Yeah. I mean, I think you bring up a really good point. And that's why, like, it wasn't so much what he's, I mean, it was definitely what he said, but it's his background that made it so powerful, that these principles, the ones that I use for the CrossFit Games, they translate. And he even said like all of these principles stemmed from sport, you know, like he played collegiate rugby and, you know, like they all stemmed from sport and then they translated into practical application, you know, out in the field. And I just thought the way that he described, like, watch your movie, be positive, always have a positive, always have a positive interaction on your movie. Like, you will be successful. There is no question. You will dominate your target. You will be successful. And watch that movie. Think through all the different things. Prepare yourself and be mentally engaged. And I just thought that was a good thing for the CBP guys, because, I mean, obviously they're out on, you know, doing work. And if they could visualize those things and then anticipate what could occur, watch that movie. Then now all of a sudden, if that does occur, it doesn't become as traumatic. It just becomes a stressful situation, was where he was like connecting it back to.
That's what I was going to ask. And we should get Carl on the podcast, but what I was going to ask is what do you do though, if, you know, you're visualizing how this is going to go down and then obviously it doesn't go down that way. Like things don't always go as planned, especially in the types of jobs that they're doing. But I think you just answered it. Like you're also trying to visualize like, what if, you know, it's not two guys behind that door, it's 10. What right. if, you know, they're not there, they're in the other room. Like you kind of have to visualize what these different scenarios are, probably trying to figure out what worst case scenario is, so that even if worst case scenario happens, you're still doing the same thing. If it's just a stressful situation, it's not going to be traumatic. It's not going to be a big deal.
Yeah. And he kept using the term prioritize, right? And if you look at like Echelon Front and Jocko and those guys and what, you know, their extreme ownership principles, like, they talk about prioritize and execute. And Carl brought that up a lot, right? Like in stressful situations, about prioritizing what's the most important. You know, he went on to talk about leadership principles that I thought were really powerful in terms of like, you know, he's been in very stressful situations where maybe he wasn't the leader and maybe the leader didn't do a great job. And he was just explaining how, like, at the time, if your life and the life of your friends is on the line, like that is not the time to, you know, rip into somebody. Like the goal is prioritize getting to a safe environment. And then if you got to go out there and rip into somebody because they made a mistake, that's fine. But it's just not the time or the place. Like, the goal is to prioritize and then execute on what's going to help you right there, the immediate first step. And yeah, we should definitely get him on the podcast, because I'm not doing justice to the value he added on that webinar. I mean, it was super impactful. And I feel like the principles that he's learned from being in the military for 20 years can translate into a lot of people's everyday life. And we should definitely talk to him for sure.
Yeah, man. He's such an interesting guy. He's also like, he's a huge guy. He's huge. Like the first time I saw him, I don't know why in like pictures, he doesn't seem like he's such a just like big, tall, just like big human. But when I saw him in person, he's a fucking huge dude.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. There's a lot. Yeah. Yes, he is. So yeah. When we get him on the podcast, remember, sure. He's a big ass dude. But I think that his background, like I said, I think it makes him uniquely qualified to talk through leadership, because he's been on tier one teams, a variety of them. And you know, he's been a leader, and he's been a, for lack of a better term, I guess, a, you know, subordinate. I don't know if that's the right term, but talking to someone like him about leadership principles, I think is really powerful. And how can we take those into our everyday life as leaders in our families, as leaders in our business, and whatnot. So Carl, we are getting you on.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think the biggest thing tying this back to like being the leader of your family, you know, one thing that I've been thinking a lot about and is hasn't gotten to the point where it's like super challenging, but I can only imagine how challenging it will get, is just like keeping your cool all the time, and just how important that is. You know, how like your reaction to stuff will like set the tone for how like the family reacts, specifically your kids. You know, like there's been times now, as you know, Shay starts going from like being a 1 year old to like closer to being a 2 year old, where kid just freaks out, man. Like, you know, he's gonna have more and more temper tantrums because he's frustrated. He's just trying to like figure it out. He's trying to tell you something. He's like, he's at the age now where he's smart enough that he like very clearly wants to communicate that he wants something very specific, but he obviously doesn't have the tools yet to tell you exactly what this thing is. And he doesn't have the tools yet to like realize that him not getting that second isn't like a, you know, RP10 thing that needs to happen. And so what happens? He like freaks out. And you know, when that happens in the context of you're trying to do something else, or you're late running out of the house, or you have to get this thing done, or all of these other things, the things really pile up, and it can get very easy to now you reacting in a way. And I think that so far, you know, I've done a really good job of like, you know, just being able to like take a step back, realize that like, he's just frustrated, he's fine, and me keeping the energy down. And I think that that's been really helpful at keeping those like RPE-10 meltdowns pretty short, and getting to the point where he just like figures it out and he calms down. But man, like, I think that that is one of the most important skills to learn and fine tune with kids specifically, but trying to be the leader of this like little tribe that you're building. It's just like, dude, as soon as like you let your cool like go, and like you lose your cool and you can't control your emotions, you have no chance at like reeling the energy back in.
You're not wrangling in the team on that.
Oh no, dude. It's just that's it. The momentum is going and it's gone. And I think you know, both me and Ariel have been pretty good so far. And I'm sure it's just gonna get more complicated with two. But man, yeah. It's hard. It is tough.
It is tough. And then as you get older, life gets more challenging, more responsibilities come into play. I mean, you know, it's funny. Today, right on our driveway right now is a bunch of signs, and it says welcome home, because today is 10 weeks in. Ava comes home in 1 hour. I'm going to go pick her up. So she's been gone for 10 weeks. She comes home today. So we're, you know, when you talk about reacting to stressful situations, I think there's micro and there's macro, right? So you have micro moments, like for example, your child is freaking out, and as they get older, it just changes the way it is, right? They don't like scream and yell, but they just like maybe act a certain way, and then you react a certain way, and then it just like it becomes almost like a you and a friend maybe are like kind of bickering a little bit, and then it like escalates. It's the same thing like with kids. Like it starts off like they react to you in a way that like kind of bothers you, then you say something, and then it says something, and then it just boom, 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 stacks. But I think, you know, that's like on a micro, then you have macro stuff that comes up, right? You have stresses that will occur over weeks, months, years, whatever those things might be for people, and reacting to them the best way you can, I think is super important. But then, you know, without, here's something to think about. Without like bad days, you can't have, you know, I said this one time, I was on like a Reebok commercial. I said like, without, like, you can't feel bliss. You can't feel the bliss, like the true, like just like happiness at a 10X, unless you also experience a challenge, right? Like if you didn't have bad days, you would never know what these good days or great days could feel like. And there has to be that kind of yin and yang. But the worst days you go through, when you have those good days, the bliss just comes at a 10X, right? And I don't know if you want those type of like huge deviations in your life. Like, I don't know if you want like way over here and way over here, because it can cause you a lot of stress. But if there is going to be a shitty situation, hopefully eventually it turns into a situation where the joy you feel makes all the challenge worth it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's less about, do you want to have those big deviations and like the highs are highs, the lows are lows, but more in recognizing that like it's kind of inevitable. You know, like in many ways it is. And, yeah. You know, some people are dealt different hand of cards than others, and that there might be more of those peaks and valleys than what seems like other people. Cause I think that's another thing too, is
perspective and perception. Right,
like you might see someone, you know, like on social media being the example of like the most extreme example of like, it seems like it's all highs and never lows, but even people in like your immediate circle, it might seem like they have less going on than you do in terms of these highs and lows. But dude, we've talked about this a bunch on the podcast. Like you never know. And I think that many times it's the people that like seem like, wow, like seems like they just have it all, that really are dealing with some stuff behind the curtain that you could never imagine. So I think it's always important to have that empathy and understanding that like, you just never know. And you know, people could be dealing with a lot. All right, guys, we're taking a break from the podcast to talk to you about the most exciting thing that we've launched at Train Hard in a while, and that is the Train Protect Provide collection that is now live on the Train Hard shop. If you've been listening to the podcast or reading our emails, you've heard us talk about these three words: train, protect, provide. These are the three pillars that are at the foundation of everything we're trying to do here at Train Hard. Train, pretty self-explanatory. We train hard to be prepared for anything life is going to throw our way. Protect, it's not about going out there and looking for trouble. It's just about being ready in the case that trouble finds us. And then provide, which is probably the most meaningful one for me, isn't just about putting food on the table. It's not just about providing financially, but it's about being there and being present and being this force of stability for your family at all times and providing anything that they need at any time. And that's something that I aspire to do every single day as a dad and a husband. And I know it's something that's super important to Jay as well. So we're super excited to now have Train Protect Provide on some awesome, awesome apparel. The team took so much time to pick out some t-shirts, some crew necks, and some hoodies that are a little different than what we've done in the past, but are different in a really good way, in that they are so comfortable and super versatile that you can work out in them or you can wear them out and they are going to look great. So go to the shop right now, the Train Hard shop, check out the Train Protect Provide collection. And since you're listening to this on the podcast, use code podcast and that'll get you free shipping. So head over to the shop, check it out, but let's get back to the show. It's funny. I just listened to, do you know Mr. Ballin?
Mr. Ballin?
Mr. Ballin. Yeah.
No, I want to be called Mr. Ballin though. That'd be cool.
Yeah, so Mr. Ballin is, I feel like if you saw his face, you would recognize him because he's been on a bunch of podcasts. He was just on Chris Williamson, which is how Mr. I like learned about him at all. Yeah.
Wait, his last name is actually like, it's not just like a nickname. It's a nickname.
It's a nickname. His name is like Mike B. Allen. It's something B. Allen. And then he ended up just getting the handle Mr. Ballin because he's a Navy SEAL, former Navy SEAL. And a bunch of people would, like young kids would reach out to him to get advice to like join the Navy SEALs. And they would always be like, because his handle was Mike B. Ballin or whatever, I forget his first name. They would call him Mr. Ballin because they thought that that was his actual last name. But anyway, long story short, he's now known for true crime storytelling. He does like live shows. He has a podcast. Super, super interesting dude. And he's a fantastic, fantastic storyteller. That's his whole shtick. So yes, he was a former Navy SEAL. He only served on like two or three tours. He wasn't in the SEALs for long. And it's funny, in the podcast, he actually tells about how much hate he got from the SEAL community for, he talks about this thing of like anyone that is a Navy SEAL and then goes on to like do the book thing or do the speaker thing or do the whatever by saying like, hey, I was a former Navy SEAL. The active Navy SEAL community like hates that. And I think it's cool how he explained it. And it was interesting coming from someone that was a recipient of a lot of this like animosity, but he explains that, you know, like being a Navy SEAL isn't about you. And if you go out there and you're like, you know, doing the motivational stuff as a former Navy SEAL, you're making it about you. Like that Trident pin that they get is about all the men that have come before you. And it's about the SEALs, and you're really supposed to like, you're supposed to serve and like, for all intents and purposes, never talk about it. But he talks about, you know, there's an interesting balance because it's easy to say that when you're an active Navy SEAL, but it's very hard to actually live that once you go back out into the world. And it's like the only thing you have, like your identity is this thing that you were a part of that you're now no longer a part of. And if you don't go out and tell people about this, like, what do you have? Like, what have you spent your last years? And he just talks about how difficult it was for him to make it in the real world without, you know, kind of using the fact that he was a Navy SEAL to like create content and this stuff. So anyway, it was an interesting, interesting dynamic. But the story that I wanted to mention was, so when he came back from a tour where he actually got hit by a grenade, so he survived because the grenade, like he explains how he saw it like at his face and he was like, wow, if it blows up here, like at least it won't be painful. And then like it went a little lower and he's like, wow, well, if it blows up here, at least my family, at least my family will be able to recognize me because they'll be able to like see my face. And it went a little bit lower. So this is all happening like millisecond by millisecond. And he remembers seeing the grenade continue to go down and not yet explode. And he was fortunate enough that it like hit the ground, rolled just far away enough, and he was able to turn and ended up surviving. But he's a great storyteller. So him telling these stories is absolutely crazy. But so he comes back from this tour where he was injured, just got hit by a grenade, like super traumatic. And he's in his HOA now where he lives with his wife. And the HOA like gave them a first notice that they had to change like their chimney thing.
Yeah. The homeowners association.
Yeah. The homeowners association.
Yeah.
And then they like hadn't changed it.
Wait,
and
what so did they need to change?
Like the chimney cover was, you know, like a little dirty or something, like something super stupid, right? That like homeowners association was just like, you have to change this, whatever.
Yeah,
but like
yeah.
No one knows that he's a Navy SEAL. No one knows that he's just been on this like traumatic tour or whatever. And he was just talking about how he like, they got the second notice and he got on the phone and like ripped this lady who was the head of the homeowners association, like ripped her head off. And he was saying it as like, it was obviously a moment that he wasn't very proud of. He was talking about how hard it is to like reestablish yourself into civilian life after going through this like traumatic battle experiences. But that just reminded me of like, dude, you never know what other people are dealing with. Like, here's this lady.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Just, I was like, wondering where you're going with this.
Yeah. One, so here's this lady like giving this, you know, couple a hard time about their chimney. And then she probably got her head ripped off. And he was like, what is wrong with this guy? Like, this guy's the worst. Meanwhile, how could you have known that this guy just came back from Afghanistan and survived, you know, getting a grenade thrown at him, where also like his buddies got severely injured. So anyway, long, big circle way of saying you don't have any idea what other people have going on, but definitely check out Mr. Ballin. Check out that podcast episode. It's really good. But he does true crime stories now, and they're insanely good. Like, he's such a good storyteller. Like, I was listening to his podcast.
He researches crimes.
He researches and then he tells the story, and he tells it in such a way where you're literally like white knuckling the whole time. And then the twist at the end is always like, that's what happened. It's really good. And they're not like super long. Like, it's not
listen to it with the kids.
Yeah. It's not like incredibly gory stuff or like anything. It's just like crazy. And the thing is, every story he tells is like true stories. Like, he's not, these aren't fiction. So anyway, it's cool stuff there and cool background. It's funny. That's one of those podcast episodes where like, you know, I saw the title, it's like Mr. Ballin, but I like Chris Williamson. There was like nothing else going on in the other shows that I listened to. So you kind of like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And then you end up finding someone that like, now you're like watching their content and they're super cool. So anyway.
Yeah. Hey, the one thing I wanted to bring up, I actually wrote this down and I forgot to bring it up, is one thing that I thought was really interesting about with Carl, and just back to this real quick, is that I would ask him, how do you downregulate? Like, how do you get back to like a homeostasis, like a calm and collected after going off like these operations? And, you know, the way that I would relate that to real life is like, maybe you're at work, you're having a stressful day. When you come home, you know, what are you doing to like level set yourself so you don't walk into the room and, you know, have this high tension, right? And he said that, you know, the ocean used to be his thing. And I think that's great when you're like in Coronado, like it makes sense. But like, what if you're overseas, or what if you're, I mean, shit, if you're in Texas, middle of Texas, you're not getting an ocean anywhere near you. And he was saying that one of the things that he would do is he'd go on long runs, kind of like what you were talking about in the mornings for you. The difference that he said, which I think is different, is never wore headphones, never. Resisted the urge to wear headphones. And I found that to be a unique like factor, only because when you wear headphones, it allows you to be distracted by a podcast, which if you're listening to this on headphones on a run, keep fucking crushing it. Okay. B, it could be music, right? You're listening to whatever you listen to. But it gives you a moment to like be focusing on other things other than internally. And so what he would say is that when he was running, he intentionally never used music or podcasts or whatever, or audiobooks, because he wanted to, you know, get inside of his head, take thoughts, clear them, take thoughts, clear them. And I thought that that was a cool little piece, you know, it's something that maybe I could take with me on my next ruck, right? Like maybe instead of having headphones, you know, and listening to audiobooks, I could be more present in that moment. And I just thought I'd share that with the audience here, because I thought that was a cool takeaway.
Yeah, I've definitely done some longer runs without headphones, and I can appreciate the whole. But I mean, now I definitely haven't. I always go out there, so I don't have headphones on. But I told you, it's like so quiet in the morning that I have like one of those little belts that carries your phone, and I just have the volume up, and I really enjoy that because it's so quiet and peaceful that I can hear it, but I can also hear my surroundings because, dude, there's like, you can hear the animals. Like I see deer all the time when I'm out there. And you can kind of like hear the rustling, and it feels cool because it feels like you're out there and you're present, but also like you are distracted by a podcast, which is nice. Like I like listening to a podcast while I'm out there, but there's definitely something. I used to do it more when I was like super competitive in running and endurance, because at the end of the day, like you're not going to race with headphones. And
that's true.
If you're really counting on like the music to pump you up and like whatever, you know, and you don't have that come race day, you know, that's definitely something that plays into like, damn, I wish I had my playlist. So that was more the reasoning why I used to do it a lot more.
Because you wouldn't race with any headphones on. Mm-mm. No. You know, when I do like these long runs, like the half marathon I did in San Francisco or whatever, I wasn't racing. So I was just, I wore headphones. But you know what's funny about that? You trained without headphones. I trained intentionally as obnoxiously loud as I could possibly get. Isn't that fun? Like, it, you know, it's...
I remember you saying that, yeah.
Yeah, when I was getting ready for these events, the CrossFit Games, the problem was like when you'd be in like the tennis stadium and you were like a lifting event, it would erupt so loud you couldn't even hear your judge from like 2 feet away. And if you're not used to that overstimulation, it could mess you up. So we would like put like 10, 20 speakers around and just like bump like, you know, aggressive rap music.
It's funny though, because even then I don't even think you can come close, but you know, you can try and come close to replicating that, but you can never replicate what it's like to like have the stand. And like, I don't even know, because I've never competed at that level, but I can only imagine that nothing can replicate that energy and stress of like being under the light. But I mean, it's good to try and get close to it, but it's just, that's the tough thing about having to perform when, you know, everything's on the line and under the lights, because as much as you train, you can't train that unless you do that, period.
Yeah. I mean, you could try, right? Like, so what I would do is I would like pound, like, I don't know, a bunch of coffee. And then I put music as loud as I possibly could, like Skrillex. Remember that? You probably like,
I remember Skrillex.
Yeah, dude, just like some like just super aggressive, dude. Just, and because what you're trying to do is you're just trying to like get your brain to say what is happening here and still be able to perform. And I mean, it would be obnoxious. I think back, like, I wonder what the fuck like neighbors were thinking, like, what is going on with these guys? But on the flip side, like in jiu-jitsu, a lot of schools don't allow music. So, you know, I personally love rolling jiu-jitsu with like Portuguese rap on and music, but some schools don't allow music. And the reason for it is the same thing that you said, where like when you compete, there is no music, and they wanted to, you know, and they also wanted you to be like super present and focused, obviously, on what you're doing. So I don't know. I'd prefer music. Let's put it that way.
For sure. No, I prefer music too, if I'm like really, really pushing it. The reason I've been exclusively doing podcasts on these runs I've been going out is because I'm specifically like, I'm not running hard. Like I'm literally trying to go out there and, you know, keep my heart rate down. I'm just trying to move, sweat a little bit. Cause it's very easy, especially now that I've been doing it for a while. I've probably been running out for like 3-4 weeks where like, you kind of get this urge to like, oh man, like, let's push it here. Like this feels good, man. You feel light. And I'm still trying to like, you know, kind of keep it because I'm my training that I'm focusing on is in the gym and I'm not ready to kind of like make the switch to like, you know, really train running. Although I might, I've been really enjoying getting back into it. And I think that this approach that I've taken, I was talking to Ariel about this the other day, man. Like I used to, every time I wanted to get back into running, I wanted to get back into the type of running that I was doing when I was a runner. And I would always get banged up. I would always get hurt and frustrated. And now, like, dude, I'm going out there and I'm running like 10 9-minute miles. Like I'm going slow and it feels so good. And that stuff is getting faster. It's feeling easier. And I don't have any of the issues that I've had in the past. Like I used to get plantar fasciitis and my AT band used to start bugging me. My glute used to get super tight and I feel great. You know, I did almost 8 miles yesterday. You know, at like an 8:40 pace. Again, like I'm not setting any speed records here, but I'm not sore today. Nothing hurts today. Like it just feels good. And
it's been remember that time we were at Camp Pendleton and we did Wait, so what did you end up getting the 1.5 mile run in? What, dude, because that wasn't like a normal 1.5 mile run we did. Like, how long ago was that? That was like 6 months, like a year ago?
It was like a year ago, yeah. I think I did it under definitely under 10 minutes, definitely not under 9. So I was like around like 9, I want to say like more than 9:30. Like,
dude.
It was quick. The thing that made that really tough is there's a really stiff headwind on the way out, which is better than it being a stiff headwind on the way back. It was nice because we went out and you were like, dude, you weren't moving anywhere, but it was nice because you turned around and then you were like, let's go.
Dude, there was like 30 of us and this was at like a selection. Well, it wasn't a selection. It was like a re-up to make sure they're hitting standard. And they had to go under 11 minutes, I want to say, right? Wasn't it under 11 they had to?
Yeah, it was 11 or 12. I want to say 11. 11. No, it was 12. I'm pretty sure it was 12.
No, for a mile and a half?
Okay, maybe it was,
10. I don't know. Anyways. It was fast. Like I remember like the cutoff was like not slow, but in either case, yeah, dude, you smoked that run and yeah, son of a bitch, you beat me on that one, but I got you overall.
Fine. You got me overall. That's right. I have a really interesting question I want to ask you. So this is going to seem super random, but I want to get your gut check opinion. So would you rather leave your daughter alone in the woods with a man you know nothing about, or a bear you know nothing about?
I feel like that's an easy question, but maybe it's a trick question. Like, I feel like I'd say the man.
Yeah. I mean, I agree once you think about it. So it's funny. Our producer, Liz, sent me this TikTok that apparently went viral, and it's an interesting, because the wife asks the husband this exact question and he doesn't have like a straight answer right away. And I think it's like an interesting, so the woman then says that like, this is how women feel every day, you know, and gives the example of like being in a parking garage and it's scary. Like if you see one man that you know nothing about, like, you know, it's nerve wracking for them. And I think that it's something that us as men can't really relate to because, you know, especially you, like I feel like, you know, you probably don't feel that way. Like you probably see a dude in a parking lot empty and you're like not thinking twice about it, but thinking how different that is for a woman, for a young woman, I think is just an interesting to think about, especially now that I'm going to have a daughter. I know that you have a daughter, like the fact that it's not even such a straight, like if the question was, would you rather leave your daughter in the forest with a woman you know nothing about or a bear you know nothing about, it would be like, oh, it's fucking the woman, right? Like
right.
Yeah, the woman's probably going to take care of her and help her get out of the woods. Like yeah. I'm not worried, but it's like a man I know nothing about, shit. Like, fuck is that man going to try and do, you know? And I think that it just goes back to it's a funny question and it's a funny TikTok. And I know that it's, if you think about it, like the answer is pretty obvious. Like, you know, there isn't a bear out there that's not going to probably do something bad, but I think it just goes back to this point of like needing more good men out there and protectors out there so that this isn't a question you have to think twice of, you know, like, good men are men that like can fuck shit up, but like won't do anything bad, you know? And I think that like having more of that out there and changing this perception of like, damn, if I know nothing about a man, like who knows if that's good news, bad news, and I wouldn't want my wife or my daughter anywhere near them, I think is interesting. But I appreciate Liz sending me that video.
No, that's a really, I'll say it's twofold. We need more men who are capable but also compassionate, loving, and just good humans, of course. And we need more women to develop skills, not only situational awareness, which is the number one by far, but also self-defense tactics to, you know, like if you had said to me, hey, you know, I don't know, like name, for example, like if you take a woman who has had plenty of training, I do think that situation is even easier for me to say. Like, imagine if you're like, well, would you rather have your, I don't know. I guess the point I'm trying to make is you need both of those things to occur. I think 100%. Women need to continue to have self-aware, you know, they need to be trained to have this like self-awareness and also have some general combative skills. That's one of the things I'm really looking forward to with Ava coming back is like, you know, it's going to take a little while to get back on what our routine was, but like, for me, teaching her self-defense skills, that's like a life skill that I am super excited to get back into because, you know, women, it is difficult. And you are right. Like, I don't think twice. Not like, I don't even think remotely twice if I'm walking into a parking garage and I see a guy. It doesn't even faze me at all. And I don't know what it feels like to have that opposite. But I do know that if you're a woman and you're not thinking that way, that's also not appropriate. Like you should be aware of your circumstances, right? Like it's unfortunate you have to feel that way, but you should be feeling that way a little bit, right? Because it could be a threat. And frankly, I should be too, right? I should have my awareness, of course, of who this person is. But yeah, man, that's an interesting, yeah, a bearer guy, like that's something to reflect on, I guess.
Yeah, no, it was a really good question. I'm glad you brought that up. But I think that that's a really good point, man. Like the situational awareness being a more important piece even than like what you would do if like, you know, you actually were like trying to be grabbed, like super important, but there's so much stuff that I think you can get ahead of if you're literally just know what to look for. And so me and Ariel took the Sheepdog course. We took it as a couple. So the guys at Sheepdog Response, who we love, Tim Kennedy, really good friend of the podcast. So they run once a year. And I think now they do it more because it was really popular because they did it around Valentine's Day. They do a couples version a protector one where everyone that goes is a couple. So, you know, husband and wife, there was a couple like, you know, boyfriend, girlfriends who go out and take this course. And it's really cool for two reasons. One, everyone's, you know, wife is being exposed to this stuff. And I think that that's super important. But two, I think that, and Ariel brought this up, she was so much more comfortable practicing all the techniques and stuff because it is like a 1 day or 2 day grappling stuff. Like it made, it was so beneficial that she's practicing everything with me, someone where there's already the comfort of like us touching each other all the time. And like, so we were able to like really dive into practicing the things we were practicing. Whereas I think it would be tough in a 2 day course with just complete strangers to maybe like dive into that stuff in a little bit more of a meaningful way. So that was a really good introduction to just some of the basics and some of the things to look for. But I think to your point, one of the really beneficial things that they spent some time talking about on Friday of that course was just the situational awareness component of it. Like, you know, keeping your head on a swivel and making sure that if you see things that like seem off, like embracing that like red flag that's going up and walking away from the situation or bringing it to my attention or doing whatever you need to do just to like, you know, be a little bit more, I don't think paranoid's the word for it, but like prepared and know what to look for. And I think that, you know, since being on that course, I know Ariel sends me some of this stuff all the time, but she follows a bunch of cool accounts on Instagram that bring a lot of awareness to like things that women specifically should be looking towards, like, you know, always parking the car, you know, where there's a light, like always making sure that, you know, you're not, you know, putting the groceries in with your back to everything, or you didn't like, you know, whatever, like there are all these like little tips that are out there to just kind of like mitigate some of the threats, especially when she's going out alone with the kids, just so that she's more aware and not readily putting herself out as like an easy victim to anything that might go down. And I hope that like we never have to use any of this stuff, but I think being aware of it and constantly educating yourself on it is something everyone should be doing for sure.
Yeah, I think the awareness piece is key. You don't have to be like overly paranoid. That's not what we're talking about. But if you go to a sheepdog response course, that's a great place to start. They do an incredible job. But it's like, I don't want to teach, you know, my family to be like overly paranoid all the time. That's not the intention. You shouldn't have tons of anxiety all the time about this stuff. But you should just be, you know, aware, just aware enough where like you're not, and I think they talk about this at the sheepdog response. It's like, you're not like in the, there's like different zones, right? Like if you're just at home, you're going to be in like this zone one, like you should be like at green, like just chill. Then you go outside the house, you're at a, you know, two, but then all of a sudden you're walking down a dark alley. You might need to jump that up to a five, but you don't need to be at a five all the time, all day, every day. Like it just, they talk about this in a really organic way. And I think 100%, man. That's one of the bear and the man. The fact that you have to, and it was the fact that you asked the question in such a way that like it made me like, I don't know, if we're just like at a bar and you're like, hey bro, like I don't think I would have thought about it as much, but the fact that you like, hey, so I got a question for you, it made me like think like, what's the angle here? But it is weird that I had to think about it for a second, right? Because you'd think it'd be like, dude, of course, like, why would you not have it with the guy, you know?
Yeah, man. No, it was a good one. It was good when she sent it to me too. But yeah, the last note that I had, I know we're coming up on the hour, but
yeah, because I gotta go pick somebody up.
Dude, I'm so happy for you guys, by the way. So happy for you guys. So excited for that. And I'm sure it's going to be a really special moment. But today, so if you're listening to this on the day that it dropped, Monday, May 13th, the new cycle of Flex did just start. We've talked about it a little bit in past episodes, but if you've missed that, you know, we just came off of a volume bias 6-week cycle. So now we're going to kind of like take a little bit off on the volume side and really try and get strong with some 5x5s, 6x4s, and 8x3s, progressing week over week on the weighted pull-up, the bench press, and the back squat. So a really fun way to always be doing that like magic number 24, 25 reps, but do it in a way where it should allow you to get heavier week over week so that by week 6, you should be significantly fucking stronger than week 1. And then we go back to volume to get big. So the way that I program Flex and these 6-week cycles is always alternating between like, how do we focus a little bit on building muscle? Then how do we focus a little bit more on getting strong, then building muscle, then getting strong? Because they A, kind of like complement each other really well. And B, then you're not doing like a shit ton of volume all the time or a shit ton of strength training, which is a little bit more taxing on the central nervous system all the time. It gives you enough time for those systems to kind of like rest while you're building the other one. So now that we're 4 cycles or about to be 4 cycles into the year, I'm super excited, especially for people that have been following since January. But if you haven't, A, there's going to be the opportunity for you to get an ebook and catch up on those first 2 cycles pretty soon here. So keep an eye out for that. And B, you can just start where we are now and you're absolutely going to get super strong and probably build some muscle. So anyway, that's my spiel. New cycle starts today. If you're not on the Train Hard app yet, make sure you download it. This is going to be a really fun cycle. We got some real fun movements, and I'm especially excited about how we're doing the functional strength piece over the next 6 weeks.
Dude, I love it. Yeah, I think what you're doing with Flex is incredible. If you listen to the show and you have not checked out what Gabe's doing on Flex, and then obviously what we're doing on Force, like, you guys got to check it out. I mean, it's the workouts that we do on a regular basis. I like Flex. Flex is definitely opening my mind more. I enjoy those type of workouts a little bit more than I used to years ago. I would have never thought that I'd be doing this type of training, but Gabe's so fired up on it that it gets me a little bit fired up on it. And the fact that there's a new cycle, that's awesome. And the eBooks, dude, like, the eBooks are a great idea because it'll give people an exposure to what we're doing. And I think it'll make a big impact on them. So I'm glad we're doing the eBooks. I'm super stoked on the new cycle. And if you guys have not checked it out, make sure to either visit our website or check out the podcast show notes, right? TH.fit, or you can go download the app and then kind of follow some directions from there. And we'd love to see you on there. But dude, Gabe Yanez, it's been a good conversation as per usual. Go back, check out the other episodes. We have a ton of really cool guests. Going back to even episode one with Matt Boudreaux, we're going to be having him back on the show. We have other guests coming up that are going to be super exciting. So stay tuned for those ones. And as per usual, leave us a rating, leave us a review. You know, I know that it seems like, you know, we talk about this on every episode, and we do, but it really helps out the show. So if you've been listening to the show and you haven't done that already, just leave us a little review. That's it. We would greatly appreciate it. I hope you and your family are doing well. Keep training hard. And Gabe Yanez, let's have a kick-ass day, huh, man?
Let's go.